on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, and I'm regular presenter of the show, as well as founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that supports people with cancer in finding out about and using integrative medicine to support their health and well-being. Each week, I introduce you to experts working in the field of integrative medicine for cancer, and this week I have two, a cancer specialist and a GP, who have joined forces to make lifestyle medicine options available to people in the UK online. Dr. Shireen Kassam and Dr. Laura Freeman are the driving force behind Plant-Based Health Online, and I'm talking to them today over the internet. Hi, Laura and Shireen. It's a pleasure to meet you both and have you as guests on the Yes Life show.
Oh, hi, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
Great. So I'm talking to you both today as you jointly started a new initiative that we're going to be exploring today, Plant-Based Health Online. A bit of a first, I think.
Yeah, the first of its kind in the UK, which is really very exciting. The first online plant-based and lifestyle medicine healthcare service. So lots to talk about.
Very good. Okay, so on the face of it, you come from rather different fields of medicine. And in the normal run of things, I can't imagine your paths would be crossing all that often. But Shireen, your background's in haematology, which in plain English means blood diseases, including cancers. Yeah. Whereas yours, Laura, is in general practice. So how did your paths cross in order for you to decide to set this up together?
Yeah, so as you say, we come from very different backgrounds. Mine is as a cancer doctor. I look after patients with lymphoma within the NHS. But during my sort of personal journey of discovering, you know, the health benefits of a plant-based diet, I came across all the evidence that supports healthy plant-based diets, plus other lifestyle interventions for supporting and improving human health, essentially. And so I've been through several years of educating myself on this subject of lifestyle medicine, which resulted in me sitting the diploma for lifestyle medicine. So myself and Laura are both certified lifestyle medicine physicians.
Right.
And I was looking to put all that into action, really, so we can provide patients with a more sort of rounded, holistic approach to their healthcare, more so than I'm able to do in my NHS practice at present. But I'm hoping the two will align shortly.
Yes, I'm hoping they will too. Laura, do you want to say a little bit about how you arrived at this point?
Yeah, well, for me, really, Robin, the journey started 5 years ago when at that time I was working as a GP in Toronto, but the kind of tables turned and I became a patient when I had a diagnosis of thyroid cancer. And just before I had my surgery as part of my treatment, I also found out through blood work that my cholesterol levels were very high. So I started kind of similar research as Shireen, looking into a whole food plant-based diet, and found that connection between cancer risk reduction and lowering cholesterol levels and many other health benefits. And so that put me on a path of researching nutrition, but also other healthy lifestyle habits, such as physical activity and restorative sleep and managing stress effectively. And that led me to studying for the diploma in lifestyle medicine and shortly after crossing paths with Shireen, which I'm very grateful for.
Great. So the diploma, where does that come from?
I think we did slightly different versions of the same thing, but it... for myself, through the International Board of Lifestyle Medicine and British Society of Lifestyle Medicine.
All right.
It's an exam and includes a case study and continuing personal development, all that accumulates in a final exam and then passing the diploma. Hmm.
So any practitioner in Britain can do that then?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Laura, the fact that you've moved into lifestyle medicine from the world of general practice is a little bit more than just coincidental. It seems that more and more GPs are taking an interest in lifestyle medicine in this country. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in the vanguard, really, of pushing lifestyle medicine forward, I feel. I love it. The most prominent of these, of course, is Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, who's been waving the flag for lifestyle medicine for a few years, starting with his great TV series, Doctor in the House, which I loved, you know, going in there, chucking out the pills and all the junk food and getting the whole family healthy by just changing the way they live. So based on your experience, why do you think it is that this is, you know, GPs in particular are so enthusiastic about this?
I mean, I think there's so many reasons. It's just, it fits into our personal lives, as in it helps us be a better role model for our patients. We know that when doctors practice these very healthy lifestyle habits themselves, that it helps us to counsel our patients more effectively on these very practices. But it's also something that we can fit with all of our patients, no matter what age they are or background or culture they come from, really applies to so many different health conditions. So it's very rewarding as a general practitioner to have kind of more tools in our toolkit when we're trying to help our patients. And I found that the majority of people are really open to this message of improving lifestyle habits, whether it's diet or sleep or exercise. A lot of patients really do want other options to medications, or if they're on medication, then they're quite happy to reduce them or even discontinue them. So to be able to offer them something that really genuinely improves their health is something that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's fantastic. I mean, the mindset that was totally reliant on getting a pill to fix whatever is beginning to fade, I'm glad to say. It was never realistic, that idea. But it certainly took hold for a very long time. And we've ended up in a situation with an awful lot of old people taking 20 pills a day or whatever it is, which is like a disaster, really, in terms of health. But anyway, yeah, very exciting to have, as you say, those other options coming into general practice. Shireen, things are lagging a little bit in oncology, I feel, compared with the GPs, but people like you are just beginning to come out the woodwork for the first time, which is so great. I'm really enjoying meeting oncologists who actually understand and want to learn about and want to use lifestyle medicine. So very exciting that you're one of those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to be honest, I see those same illnesses in my own patients, you know, mm-hmm. high blood pressure, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. And they, you know, clearly impact the patient's quality of life. They impact the treatments that are available to them because of the side effect profiles. They impact how they tolerate the treatments I'm able to give them. And of course, in the longer term, when we're talking about cancer survivorship, you know, these long-term conditions alongside the treatments I've had to give really do impact quality and quantity of life. Because despite the fact that I can, you know, provide treatments that effectively cure quite a lot of lymphoma, we know that people who've had lymphoma treatment live less long than, you know, the average person because they are dying early still of cardiovascular disease and second cancers. So, you know, it's just as important, that conversation. And, you know, as Laura says, patients are so motivated. I mean, there's nothing quite like being told you have it's a life-altering diagnosis. But then, you know, as you probably know from the people you interact with, it's just overwhelming to have everything, you know, placed in front of you at the same time. And you need that sort of additional support outside the, you know, talking about chemotherapy and the side effects and signing your consent form, etc. It's just not possible to do it all in one sitting. And then, you know, sadly, this within the NHS, you know, you sort of only get to talk about your nutritional needs if you are, you know, underweight or malnourished, and most of my patients don't fall into that bracket, you know, they fall into the typical two-thirds of the population that are living with other chronic illnesses and often an unhealthy weight as well. So that's kind of driven my motivation towards plant-based health online, which makes Laura and our missions, you know, very aligned.
Well, there's two thoughts from what you said. One is the sheer power of the endorsement of lifestyle approaches by an oncologist. This is something that doesn't generally happen. Unfortunately, the it doesn't matter what you eat story from oncologists is still as alive and well now as it was 16 years ago when I started Yesterlife. But I'm hoping that's all going to change very soon. You know, very often patients are motivated to do something, and when they get there, well, there's no point, it doesn't matter, just eat whatever you like. That completely undermines their enthusiasm for what actually is something very helpful to do. So I'm hoping that they will start to get an endorsement. Oncologists don't need to be lifestyle experts, but the difference between saying, hey, great idea, go and find an expert and make some changes is a very powerful thing and will help a lot of people, I think. The other thing I picked up in what you said was you talked about second cancers, and that fact that, yeah, people who are unhealthy are more likely to get a second cancer or recur is a very important point, and it demonstrates really the power of making your body as healthy as possible. The majority of people are getting cancer because of lifestyle issues. That's one of the major features of why we get cancer, and so that's some shortcoming in our lifestyle. If you can change that around and start to lead a much more health supporting lifestyle, then the chances of getting cancer, well, they go right down, whether it's first time or second time. So in terms of staying alive, it's hugely important. I mean, the treatment may be hugely important in dealing with the firefighting situation you've got at the time, but in terms of living a long and healthy life, this is on a par.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, so we'll come back to all this in a bit more detail later, but can you give us the short version now of what the plant-based health online service offers? Laura, do you want to start?
Yeah, I will do. Thank you. So it's an online service where patients can visit our website, which is plantbasedhealthonline.com, and they can book an appointment with the practitioner that they choose. We have this amazing team of GPs, a dietitian, a nutritionist, and a health coach. All of them actually have amazing personal transformations with a whole food plant-based diet and healthy lifestyle habits, which is really incredible. But so our patients can choose one of our practitioners and select a date and time that they would like to see them. They're emailed with a booking confirmation and a link to start a video consultation at the time of the appointment. And then they're able to connect with us and talk through in detail their medical and lifestyle history. And then we work really closely with them to build a personalised management plan to really optimise their health. And what's so exciting about it is that we're able to include everyone, you know, no matter where they are on their health journey, whether they've just been diagnosed with cancer, whether they're, you know, further into their cancer treatment or whether they finished it. And no matter what kind of dietary pattern they're following at the time, whether it is plant-based or vegetarian or, you know, whether they've never thought about it before. So we're really able to help people wherever they are and whenever they're ready.
Okay. And it's a very specific initiative you've got here with a kind of does what it says on the tin approach, you know, and but there's a whole range of reasons why people will take up a plant-based diet, ranging from there could be completely ethical reasons at one end of the spectrum across to completely health reasons at the other. And so I'm just interested to hear where you two stand on that spectrum.
Yeah, so for me, I'm 100% plant-based in my diet approach, and I have been since 2013. And as you say, it's the one diet that addresses so many of the problems we're facing, you know, human health, planetary health, and clearly you know, a compassionate kind of way of living on this planet. Because, you know, as you know, the only foods that are associated with, you know, health promotion are fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts and seeds, really. And everything else is a sort of optional added extra. And in fact, you know, things like red meat and processed meat are actively contributing to an increased risk of illnesses such as cancer, cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. And, you know, the animal agricultural side of things is really impacting climate crisis and the ecological crisis. So for me, it sort of encompasses everything I would like out of my diet and keeps me well and healthy. And, you know, as you know, the World Cancer Research Fund guidelines for patients with cancer, after cancer, and of course for preventing your first cancer, clearly states, you know, that your diet should be rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains and beans. So it really sticks with all these dietary guidelines. You know, of course, as Laura says, you know, you don't have to be 100% plant-based. For me, it's easier to think about what I am going to eat and not worry about the bits that are optional. It's just natural. And, you know, it's very difficult to moderate other parts of the diet if people choose to do that. So and it's so varied. You know, there's thousands of edible plants and herbs and spices and things to make your food so tasty. So it suits me just fine.
Okay. How about you, Laura? Mm.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I also follow 100% whole food plant-based diet, and have done really since my diagnosis in 2016. Like, that transition away from a diet which I previously thought was healthy, but now that, like, I look back on it, was very heavy in dairy and poultry, for example. You know, I know that I'm doing the best for my health, and it's allowed me to practice in a way professionally that's aligned with my personal values as well. But the most exciting thing about that is being able to see such success amongst my patients. And then so whilst I started it for health reasons and stay motivated for that, and also for the health benefits I see in my patients, I've also just become much more aware of my role and responsibility to talk about planetary health, which is a conversation that I never had with my patients before changing my diet, because the truth is I really wasn't aware. Like, I had not made that connection between the choices and my food choices and how that was affecting the health of the planet. But I think as a GP, as any healthcare professional, really, we do have some responsibility to take this conversation into the consultation room, just gently start to, you know, increase our patients' awareness and help them make that connection too. So, yeah, while I started it for health reasons, thinking about planetary health, thinking about a more compassionate way of living has become really much more important to me.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, well, I noticed on your website you don't use the word vegan at all. I don't think I saw it anywhere. Is that, am I right? It's not in there. You always talk about plant-based diet. So why is that? What's the difference? Or is there a difference?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, veganism is a social justice movement that, you know, centres animals at its core. You know, what we're doing is helping people to move towards a plant-based diet, which literally just talks about what we're eating. And also, you know, a vegan diet doesn't tell you what somebody is actually eating. It tells you what they're avoiding in the diet. Mm-hmm. And clearly one could have a healthy vegan diet or a very unhealthy vegan diet. I mean, you know, regardless of whether you're vegan or not, you're going to notice the absolute, you know, sort of explosion of vegan fast food and ultra processed foods. And, you know, that is equally or if not worse than sort of a healthy kind of omnivorous diet. So, you know, we want to be up front and center about what people need to eat. And that's centered around whole plant foods, minimally processed, you know, and getting back to sort of home cooking and just calling something vegan, you know, could be Pringles and Oreos and Diet Coke and things.
Yeah, right.
Not going to help.
Well, that's
anyone.
A very, very interesting point. And I did want to ask you about that anyway. So, yeah, it's kind of I feel there's been a bit of a move amongst fast food manufacturers, amongst corporations, to embrace the word vegan and to make it synonymous with healthy when it's quite clearly not. And it feels like it's given a new impetus to junk food at a time when the public's faith in it was waning for the first time. So it's a bit unfortunate in a way, isn't it?
I totally agree. I'm not terribly supportive of, you know, the industry jumping on the bandwagon and, you know, realizing they can make a buck out of vegans or those on a plant-based diet and, you know, effectively supporting the transition from a junk food omnivorous diet to a junk food vegan diet, because sadly in 10 years time, you know, we'll be saying, well, that never helped anyone. You know, of course it will help reduce, you know, the impact on the climate and, you know, it's kinder to animals. And of course, there's benefit to that, but for human health and our healthcare system, I have major doubts.
Right. But even in terms of the environment, of course, the junk food has all sorts of things in it that are bad for our environment. You know, the creation of them is a mistake as well. So, it's not going to do anybody much good, I don't think. But, one aspect of that, which is kind of important to people who are trying to eat less meat, are all these meat alternatives that are there, and I think some of those fit largely into the category of junk food as well. But what's your general feelings about meat alternatives?
It's a complicated topic, to be honest. You know, for me, the first thing is, well, they're not necessary. They're not necessary in our diet at all. You know, as I say, the only foods associated with good health are, you know, the minimally processed plant foods. So, and I worry that the motivations are just another way for food corporations to make money out of us. Having said that, you know, there has actually been one randomized study of, you know, good quality beef versus the Beyond Meat substitutes. And in a short study, small numbers of patients or people, it was able to show that there was a measurable benefit, you know, people in the study on the meat alternative version lost a few more pounds and their blood cholesterol level came down. And I think, you know, it's not just one product. There's some that are better than others.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, if you're just swapping out animal fat for coconut oil, for example, well, you're not going to do your heart health any good. But, you know, you can get quite minimally processed, you know, faux meat that are made from soya or tempeh or whatever. So, you know, it's a class of food that sort of inverted commas is becoming more prevalent, but you can make healthier choices. And, you know, I think the fact that you are eliminating animal-derived saturated fat and the animal protein, which is so heavily implicated in the onset of chronic diseases, there may be a small advantage, but I think it's going to take a long time to really discover that. And, you know, we know, as you say, that any sort of processing reduces the nutritional value and can sometimes even cause harm.
Hmm. So exactly the same caveats apply to vegan products as any other, is watch out what they're doing to it.
Absolutely.
So the ethical reasons for any particular decision, they're, of course, enormously important. And the byproducts for the well-being of our environment, of many of those decisions for a natural approach to health, what you could call those kind of collateral benefit, are eminently worthy of highlighting. But this show's about health in particular, issues around cancer particularly, from prevention to longevity. So, you're a cancer specialist, Shireen. Do you want to make the case for plant-based nutrition in relation to cancer?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a general intro to this topic, we know that around 4 out of 10 cancers could be prevented if we all adopted healthy lifestyle behaviours. So that includes a healthy diet, it includes regular physical activity, it includes avoiding toxins such as tobacco, smoking and alcohol. It also includes things like, you know, breastfeeding your child if you are a mother and you're able to, because that reduces your future risk of breast cancer, for example. And obviously physical activity, regular, you know, physical activity, ideally daily. And these sort of lifestyle behaviours have enormous impact. And as I say, as a whole, they help reduce your personal risk of cancer. And in the population level, we could prevent around 4 out of 10. And, you know, all these healthy lifestyle behaviours help to keep you a healthy weight, because unfortunately, we're facing a problem where carrying too much weight is also increasing the risk of cancer. Because ultimately, cancer is driven by the same processes as type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. It's sort of chronic underlying inflammation. So just bringing it back to diet, we want to eat a diet that helps you keep your cells healthy, your tissues healthy, and reduces inflammation. It does not damage your DNA or proteins, and does not drive the growth of any cells, or particularly sort of damaged cancerous cells. And as I've said already, the only foods that have been shown in long-term studies to be associated with a lower risk of cancer are fruits and vegetables, and we probably need to be eating around 10 portions a day of fruits and vegetables. That reduces your personal risk of cancer in the order of 10 to 15%. Whole grains, really important, partly because of the fibre, but all of the B vitamins and things as well, and the folate. And particularly for colorectal cancer, with the fibre in the whole grains, every extra 10 grams of fibre you eat, you get a 10% reduction in the risk of colorectal cancer, for example. And then beans, nuts and seeds, they've all had those same associations, partly the fiber, the healthy fats and the additional micronutrients. And I think we forget that the micronutrients are really the ones that are there keeping our cells healthy. So the antioxidants, the anti-inflammatory compounds, they're only found in the rich, colourful fruits and vegetables. You know, you don't find the abundance in animal-derived foods. And in contrast, of course, animal-derived foods such as red and processed meat directly impact your risk of cancer, particularly related to colorectal cancer. So processed meat is a group 1 carcinogen, and in the UK, the Cancer Research UK quotes that 13% of all colorectal cancers are directly caused by eating processed meat. So that's over 5,000 cases a year. That's not insignificant. And red meat, group 2 carcinogen, so it probably causes cancer. And so the strength of that association is there the most for colorectal cancer, but it also increases your risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer. And as I say, it's just not necessary. It's not providing any nutrients that you cannot get in a more healthy package in whole plant foods. So, you know, that's my main case for eating plant-based. And as I say, you know, if you want to get the volumes of foods, the 10, 11 portions of fruits and vegetables you need to have the optimal impact of your diet, you really need to crowd out everything else. You know, I think it's about, you know, making sure your plate is full of the healthy foods and leaving very little space for things like meat, dairy and eggs, which are not really helping you keep your cells free of cancer.
Mm. Well, yeah, 10, of course, is a double government recommendations. That's not really a surprise, in as much as most government recommendations seem to be about half or less of what a lot of practitioners will recommend. So if I come along to you and I'm not a vegetarian, I'm not a you know, plant-based at all, but I'm interested in the subject. I've read all about the fact that, you know, as you point out, all the healthy stuff seems to be in the vegetables and everything, and they're not my major. Can I approach you for help? Maybe I don't even want to become plant-based, but I want to change the balance of my diet because I know that it's you know, heavily on the other side. Is that something you would help people with?
Absolutely. And that's exactly the type of people we hope are going to come our way.
Right.
You know, we had put plant-based in our title of our name because we did want to be really upfront and honest about the dietary approach that we were taking and recommending based on all the evidence that Shireen has just been discussing. But I think it's important for us to really convey that message, you know, that we're not dogmatic in our approach and that we really will meet and support our patients wherever they are, you know, on that journey in terms of their thinking around changing their current diet. And that's the reason for being able to connect with our healthcare professionals, especially as people who I've mentioned have done this themselves in their own personal lives. So they have experience of what it's like to change your menu and your shopping list and how to, you know, cook and prepare and navigate around things like, I mean, maybe we're not doing this so much just now in lockdown, but eating out with friends or family or traveling, for example, because those are all really important things to consider when we're supporting our patients to make lifestyle changes. We're not suggesting that people come and see us for help to start a 2 to 3 week diet. This is really about making healthy changes for the long term. So yes, in short, we'll support people no matter what dietary approach that they take, but really encourage and support them to move over to a plant predominant diet.
Mm-hmm. It's quite fascinating really how quickly some new ideas in this direction have taken hold, I feel. It wasn't very many years ago. You were hard-pressed to find a decent vegetarian option on a menu when you went into a pub or a restaurant. You know, they didn't even know how to cook something good that was vegetarian. And now that suddenly there's this explosion of veganism, which is a lot further down the scale in terms of that of finding new ways of delivering, serving and delivering food. So it's quite surprising how very quickly that change seems to have happened.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's being driven, as people say, by millennials, but increasingly by those of us who are concerned by the climate crisis as well. So that I think that's sort of bumped up the numbers who are adopting a vegan diet, because it is the single most important thing one can do to reduce your carbon footprint, you know, without, as you say, too much difficulty regarding the options. But I mean, I guess it's worth just saying that obviously we offer so much more than just a dietary approach, and everything I've said about diet could just be immediately translated to physical activity. You know,
right.
It promotes your insulin sensitivity, it changes gene expression, it lengthens your telomeres, and it significantly reduces your risk of cancer recurrence, especially for the most common cancers like breast, prostate, and colorectal cancer. And even if you're, you know, you already have sort of underlying health conditions and haven't been healthy, just meeting those, you know, recommended physical activity guidelines of about half an hour of physical activity a day can really, really kickstart your recovery process. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's not just about wanting to change your diet. It's about the whole sustainable, healthy lifestyle approach. And you start with what's most comfortable for you. So,
right. Yeah, very important. So that's really, you know, the new face of the GP, really, they're able to offer those kind of approaches now. I mean, social prescribing is a revolution, really, isn't it? That is another thing that came out of nowhere, suddenly appeared. You know, it's just, it seemed like it, one day it wasn't there and the next it was. But it's actually given a whole new mode of operating for GPs, that they can actually, they've got a new toolbox, if you like, at their disposal, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's just putting all those, enabling them to put lifestyle advice into practice for their patients, because it's not good enough to say, go out and do your exercise. You need to be able to provide them with the right support and opportunities that are not often or can often not be available for patients. But I'll let Laura talk to you about her walk with a doc, because she started that prior to her lockdown.
Well, it was something that I had heard about just before I moved over back from Toronto to the UK, and thought it sounded like an amazing idea. So it's called Walk with a Doc. It was started by a cardiologist, David Sagbeer, in the States about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. He was at the time getting really frustrated that his patients, you know, he was telling them to be more active, yet they were sitting, you know, for an hour in his waiting room and were largely leading sedentary lifestyles. And he suggested one weekend that some of his patients met him in the park and that they would go for a walk together. And I think, much to his surprise, nearly 100 people turned up. And they met the weekend after and the weekend after that, and it turned into a regular occurrence, you can imagine. And fast forward 15 years, it's become a global sensation, whereby doctors, or I think some other healthcare professionals and certainly medical students, will meet with a group of patients and deliver a short presentation on a health topic, and then walk for 45 minutes to an hour. And so I knew that I really wanted to do this, that it would be something really fun and different to do. And I started that, it was just maybe about a year and a half ago, and at least managed to get a good handful of walking sessions in before the pandemic began, and we had to stop it, although hopefully can restart that soon.
Coming soon.
It was amazing and really heartwarming to be able to see people who had arrived for these walks by themselves, but then develop, you know, strong connections and some friendships while they were walking. And I ran it from a plant-based restaurant actually in town in Glasgow. And so we would have the health presentation and walk, and then people would eat a really delicious plant-based meal together afterwards. So it just ticks so many boxes. It was a really, really fun thing to do.
Excellent. Yeah, I find it interesting the way that exercise has come from left field in a certain way. I mean, everybody's always had the idea that exercise is healthy, but as an intervention in cancer, well, it didn't exist a little while ago. You were supposed to just stay in that bed, basically, take the chemo and don't whinge. And suddenly it's being, you know, demonstrated it's actually rather more effective than some extremely expensive drugs. So it's come in from left field. And interestingly enough, I think it's driven the change, the move towards lifestyle medicine quite considerably, because the forces have been lined up around the territory of nutrition forever. There are corporations wanting that piece of the action for themselves, a large piece, and they don't want things to change. And, you know, so there's all these forces at work keeping nutrition out of medicine largely. As you said, Shireen, you know, if you've got cachexia, somebody will do something about it, but otherwise, forget about it. Go and eat a good, healthy diet is the best you're likely to get as advice. And but of course, nutrition is a very advanced science now and could do so much to help, well, people with cancer or anybody else with any chronic disease. It's an absolute tragedy that it's hasn't moved faster. It's, you know, its progress in medicine hasn't been anything like on a par with the science, which is moving forward very rapidly. But then along comes exercise, and it suddenly there's this science, bam, shows like, you know, 65% reduction of recurrences or something, you know, enormous figures coming in. And there aren't any forces lined up to stop it, interestingly, in the same way. And so it's actually, I feel it's progressing quite fast. And hopefully it's carrying along a few of the others with it, you know, sort of Trojan horse to get the nutrition in there as well. So, very interesting the way things are developing.
Yeah, and I think things are changing because, you know, there's growing number of medical students and healthcare professionals like myself and Laura who are really realising that they want to use nutrition, and so are demanding the education from the medical schools and in postgraduate curricula and are getting themselves the experience they need to then implement this effectively. So, you know, with all change that happens, it's always at the grassroots, isn't it? And I think once we've got a loud enough voice, things will start to change. But as you say, the forces at play will mean that, you know, pharmaceuticals always trump a nutrition study, for example, when you're trying to find funding for clinical trials.
Well, absolutely.
I had the similar sort of experience during my PhD. We really wanted to do a big scale trial of, you know, supplementing selenium in patients having lymphoma treatment because it looked really good in the lab. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, because we didn't have big pharma supporting us, it sort of fell a bit flat. So I had first-hand experience to know that really it's not necessarily the right questions that are being studied. It's the agenda, the science agenda is being driven by which drug looks most promising.
It's profit, unfortunately. Yes, I mean, we like to think in this country our medicine is not a profit-based thing, but of course it is. And, you know, until governments get serious about this and actually fund the stuff that looks the most promising as delivering good health cheaply, we're all going to be in this mess. So
I agree.
It's a rather tragic situation. So, look, we're running out of time. I want to put a cancer-specific question into round off. In your experience, what would you say are the kind of cases or cancer types or whatever, you know, the groups of people that you found you can offer the most help to, the people who you feel are most impacted by the changes towards plant-based nutrition and the other lifestyle approaches that you bring to it as well?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I think everyone could be impacted in a positive way. I mean, based on the science we have so far, most of the studies have shown benefits for the common cancers for obvious reasons, because we've been able to study them more extensively. So the strength of evidence is there the most for breast cancer, prostate cancer, colorectal cancer. And of course, you know, everyone's comfortable with knowing that lung cancer, more than 80% is caused by tobacco smoking. So that kind of goes without saying. So the common cancers, the common, you know, four or five cancers that we would see in the healthcare service. But having said that, I think, you know, just because we haven't proven it in a large scale study, adopting these healthy lifestyle behaviors is for sure going to improve and impact quality of life after any cancer diagnosis, just because of what we understand about food, sleep, exercise, stress relieving activities, you know, doing regular yoga and mindfulness has on the body. You know, it brings down inflammation, it boosts the numbers of your immune cells. So, you know, I don't think this is just for one kind of cancer or one kind of person, and it really has the ability to have a whole person approach, which is what has drawn myself and Laura to it. But I suspect Laura sees a slightly different range of patients to me.
Yeah, do you want to add to that, Laura?
Well, actually, yeah, I mean, I was actually going to say that with, you know, it really does kind of convey the message that I would have answered as well, because I think that we are seeing, you know, typically patients with breast cancer, colon cancer, maybe prostate cancer too, and that does overlap with the evidence that we have for a whole food plant-based diet. But at the same time, you know, we and much like Shireen pointed to very early in this discussion, is that our cancer patients also have, you know, the common conditions like high blood pressure and high cholesterol, you know, much like myself. And so even if we don't have, you know, evidence directly supporting their specific cancer diagnosis, there may be overlapping conditions where we know it can be beneficial. Even thinking about things like depression and anxiety, which are very common in cancer patients, you know, that's something that's really, really important for us and that we're able to provide some help and support with.
So it's a form of medicine that applies to any chronic disease you like, really, doesn't it? Let alone any cancer. Getting yourself as healthy as possible, well, you can't beat it, really, from the point of view of you're bound to benefit in some way. All right. Do you want to just give us your website address for people who'd like to go and have a look?
Sure. It's plantbasedhealthonline.com.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah. And thanks for joining me today, Shireen and Laura. Congratulations on getting your new initiative off the ground. I know it's always a big deal starting anything new. It's always harder than you think. So I wish you every success in building up people's health and well-being.
Thank you, Robin.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Do check out this new resource at www.plantbasedhealthonline.com. I'd like to remind you of Yesterlife's upcoming Spring Congress, a whole weekend looking into the science behind nutrition from every angle, which includes a day of talks and discussions, as well as a day built around workshops for you to engage in. It's on the 27th and 28th of March, just a month away. And you should still be able to pick up an early bird ticket by going to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and clicking the button on the big banner advertising the event at the top of the homepage. This will take you to the event website where you can read all about the speakers and the range of subjects they'll be tackling and book yourself a place. Thanks very much for listening today. I'll be back next week with another expert from the field of integrative medicine, another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.